So, that works, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm not going to take off. So, the way we model time illiquidity is in the following way. We set up a finite horizon, yeah, capital T. We won't do the usual thing. What do people do in theoretical math finance? We assume zero interest rate, or yeah, we can say that everything is discounted. And we also have a risky asset, S, which is traded and observed. So not only that it's traded, but it's also only observed at some exogenous random times, tau sub n. Okay. So what we want to do is to model this sequence of random times to accumulate at capital T, which is a finite horizon time. Okay. So of course, as I was just saying, before maturity, what an agent trading into this market is going to see? Going to see only the trading times that occur before time T, and also the quoted prices at those corresponding times. Okay. So we had a little bit more structure. So of course, problem. This is a model, so of course all models are subject to criticism. This one in particular, and the way we structured this, we build this model is we say the discrete time observed asset prices actually come from an unobserved but continuous time stochastic process. This doesn't have to be the case that this is really a continuous time. Most of it is because in the end we want to do asymptotics, so analyze also to compare it with the continuous time behavior. But we do make this assumption and we think about it like, look, ST is the basis of S sub capital T for continuous time T. This is a price which is, can say, based on fundamentals. This is what the trader would see if this asset was actually traded at all times. So we assume this is an exponential EV process, stochastic exponential EV process, and this is kind of a big typo here where so S is stochastic exponential of L, where L has the jumps of L are greater than negative 1, and this is an inhomogeneous Levy process. So of course it has deterministic predictable characteristics, so it can be decomposed in a simple way like we have below. And of course the question is, why do we take it inhomogeneous? We think it makes reasonable sense since this is an inhomogeneous time problem, so we have more and more trades close to maturity, that the fundamentals somehow should also be time inhomogeneous. So this is not just a Levy process, it's a time inhomogeneous. Okay, and I would say probably the big assumption is that the trading slash observation time and this fundamental price, which is continuous, S sub capital T, are independent. So this is certainly a big assumption, and I would say this is probably the one that could be criticized the most. And so, once we have this fundamental price, capital S, it's continuous from time 0 to capital T, we denote by Z sub TS the returns between times S and T, and between time T and S. And of course, this is an unobserved return, and we would only see this return if this asset was traded both at time S and at time T. And we denote by PTS its a distribution. Okay. So we do make some assumptions, which I'm not going to emphasize here, which actually say that the return, because the stock price is positive, so the return they have to be 100 below negative 100%. So, but they are going to have full support in negative 1 to infinity. Okay. What about the observation slash trading time? So the whole point of what we want to make is that we want to have more and more frequent trading near the horizon time T, and we also need a reasonable mathematical structure. So we already start with a big assumption that S is an exponential EV. So of course we're going to assume something which is Markov on the sequence of stopping times, and the solution is to assume that the tau n's are jump times of an inhomogeneous plus one process with deterministic intensity. Okay, so how does it work? It's the usual thing that we see in credit risk when we have a non-constant intensity. So we start with a Markov process with intensity 1 that we call m. We choose an intensity function that has a finite integral up to any from 0 to any time t, strictly before maturity and integrates to infinity up to maturity. And then we run the intensity 1 Markov process n at this new speed, the integral of the intensity. And, or in other words, is to say, and we're going to call tau n the jump of this new Markov process, or in other words, it's the same thing as saying we have a sequence of exponentially distributed inter-arrival times, and then we run this jump at the speed lambda u. Okay. So in the end, this is exactly what we want. In time, up to time capital T, we're going to run our new clock up to infinity, so of course we're going to have an infinite number of jumps, so, and the jumps are going to be closer and closer to capital T. Okay. So we do have a Markov structure for the sequence of stopping times tau n. And the nice thing is this Markov structure is homogeneous, and what I mean is homogeneous in the discrete parameter n. So it doesn't matter how many jumps we had to see when is the next jump going to... So if we have a jump now, conditionally, it doesn't matter how many jumps we had in the past, it only matters we're going to have the same kind of conditional distribution for the next jump. Okay. So, in this market we have trading strategies. So, of course, the whole point of the model is that trading and observations occur only at the stopping time tau k. So, of course, we'd expect that to have a discrete trading strategy where at any moment, let's say tau sub n minus 1, after we had n minus 1 trading and observations, we're going to take a position alpha sub n in between time tau sub n minus 1 up to time n, and doing so we should only take into account what has been posted so far, which is the prices s sub tau k up to n minus 1, and also the trading and observation times tau sub k from k equal 1 to n minus 1. So in other words, if we define a discrete filtration observing only the quoted prices and their corresponding times, when trade times, we have this discrete filtration, and this the trading strategy should be predictable with respect to this discrete filtration. Okay. Wealth processes, of course, it makes sense only to talk about wealth at the trading and observation time, otherwise one can not liquidate his or her position. So we're going to have a wealth process defined only at tau n, and of course we have a very simple discrete equation for the wealth. It's going to be how much we invested times the observed return. So z sub n is actually the observed return, so which occurred in between trading times tau sub n minus 1 and tau sub n. Okay. We do have an admissibility condition, so whenever it makes sense to talk about wealth, this should not go below zero. So liabilities should never exceed assets, and of course we ask for this only at the trading times as well. We denote by capital A the set of all admissible strategies, and now we define terminal wealth as the limit of, so again, wealth process only makes sense to talk about it at the trading times. Fortunately, the trading and observation times accumulates to maturity. It makes perfect sense to define x sub t as the limit. Of course, mathematically, we have to see whether the limit exists, but it certainly exists because of admissibility condition, and if there is a Martingale measure, which is a part of our assumption. Okay. What about the distribution of the observed returns? So, as we were just saying, condition where we, so after the end trading and observation time, condition on it, the next trading time will occur with this kind of distribution, and conditioning further on knowing tau sub n plus 1, we also know the distribution of the return. So therefore, we have a good structure for the distribution of the unobserved return. So one of the consequences is that the unobserved return has a full support in negative 1 infinity. So if we trade now, we are not going to be allowed to trade immediately, but we'll have to wait for a random time. So, and in between this random time, so of course, the stock can drop very close to zero. So this means that we can lose close to 100% of the money invested into this asset, as well as gaining close to any reason, any positive quantity. So it can go to infinity and close to negative one. Okay. Why does this matter? Because this discrete feature is going to have a very important implication towards admissibility. So, if we were in continuous time, things would be a little bit different. But because we have this discrete feature, admissibility means that actually we have short sale constraints, because even if the fundamental price is continuous, driven by a Brownian motion alone, an exponential Brownian motion, for example, still, because trading occurs at discrete times, the stock can still drop to zero even from today until the next trading time. So, and it can also go really high. So, we do have short sale constraints both on the money market and on the asset. Okay. So, in other words, alpha n should be in between zero and the total wealth at the time of the trade. If we write it in terms of proportion, this means that the proportion invested in the asset should be in between 0 and 100%. Okay. So, and this whole feature appears from the discrete setting. Okay. Now, in this model, we want to solve an optimal investment problem. Yeah, we have a terminal time horizon, so we choose the simplest problem of utility maximization from terminal wealth. Utility, the usual thing, is strictly increasing, strictly concave, and C1 plus in other condition. And technically, we need a little bit more on the behavior of the tails. It should be power-like at infinity and zero. This is for some reason that I'll make the site later to be able to do verification. Okay, so we get the utility U. This is kind of general. The important thing is it defined on zero infinity, and this is the reason why we need admissibility. And admissibility leads to short sale constraints. Okay, so one of the features of the problem is we want to solve it by dynamic programming. What I call direct dynamic programming is not the viscosity solution way, so the other direction, but we want to write the dynamic programming, then actually solve it, and then prove that this is the value function, and we also, and more importantly, then we have the optimal strategy. So in the end, we care mostly about the optimal strategy, I would say, rather than the value function. Okay, so this is what the part somehow that I was thinking. So although the model is kind of simple, of course, but the good thing about it, I would say, is that it allows to go through direct dynamic programming, so we don't have to go through viscosity solution and prove the dynamic programming principle probabilistically and so on. Okay, and so another nice feature of this very simple model is the following. It is a finite horizon with respect to time, a finite horizon problem with respect to time. On the other hand, I was saying, by the way, the sequence of stopping times are set up, it's an infinite horizon with respect to the number of trades and observations, so that we call n. In other words, the states that we care about are going to be only the wealth and the time, and the wealth alone. And of course, time will also appear in the dynamic programming, but no number of trades. Okay, so for this reason, we're looking for a value function, depending on where we are, how much wealth we have. And, of course, what does it mean, VFT and X? This is T is time, and X represents the amount of wealth that we would have if a trade were actually allowed at this time. Yeah, because I was just saying that wealth makes sense to define it only at the trading and observation time. So, if a trade was allowed at time T, then this means we would have X well. Okay. So we have the usual thing, how we derive dynamic programming equation. We say, so the value function plugged in to any wealth process should provide a super martingale with respect to this discrete filtration, and it should provide a true martingale with respect to the optimal. And in addition, expect that when you get close to maturity, this value function will look very much like the utility that we put on the terminal time horizon. Okay, so we have a Markov structure on the model, so let's see how we actually write the dynamic programming. It's very easy. because we have conditional probabilities, to write the conditional expectation of a function depending on next jump time and the wealth that is going to be, we're going to have at the next trading and observation time, condition on where we are today. So this is how next trading time appears with this distribution, and condition on the next trading time, we have this distribution of the return. Okay. So this is the conditional expectation of the quantity above, and it should be greater or equal than the value function today if we have a super martingale, and it should be equal if we have a true martingale. Okay. So for this reason, it's pretty easy to write the dynamic programming equation. We compare, so we replace the stopping time tau and the wealth by a dummies, and we take the sup over all possible strategies, and we have a nonlinear integral equation. Of course, we can think in terms of cash values of what we invest in the stock, in terms of proportion, and we have something very similar. So we have a nonlinear integral equation with a terminal condition. So this is the dynamic programming, so everything so far is kind of it's a formal, basically. And now we want to solve this. Fortunately, the model is kind of simple, so the equation is reasonably simple, so although it's nonlinear, we can solve it. And we can solve it using a sequence of monotone iterations. So we set up the value function in step 0 to be utility at all times, and then we iterate Vn plus 1 to be this nonlinear integral operator applied to Vn. Unfortunately, yeah, this operator is monotone, so I'm going to have an increasing sequence of iterations, and they converge to something. And actually, this is going to be a solution of the dynamic programming equation. Okay. Now we have to go through verification. So, by definition, by the way we set up the dynamic programming equation, we have a super martingale, so initial value is greater than value at expected value at any time. If we have uniform integrability, we can let n go to infinity and replace what we have here in the limit by the utility at terminal wealth. So we're going to have that v is certainly better than the value function, and if we take the controls that actually realize if they are the argmax in this we take the controls that which are the argmax in this nonlinear operator in the soup, then of course we do expect that provided we have uniform integrability, we are going to have the same kind of behavior, but except for instead of a greater or equal sign, we're going to have an equal sign, so this is going to be the optimal wealth, and this arc soup is going to be the optimal control in the feedback form. Fortunately, because this is a discrete time problem, I mean, there is no problem to prove that a closed loop equation has a solution and so on. It's just it's an Euler scheme, so there is nothing continuous here, so that we need to worry about having solutions. Okay. So in the end, what we are able to is to actually solve the problem. So we find the value function, and we find the optimal control in feedback form. And again, part that I like the most is that in this process we avoid the scarcity solution, so we can do it directly. Of course, this is more or less due to the fact that this is an integral equation, so integral equations, they are certainly easier to deal with even than the case that if we had a differential term as well. There are some technical details. For example, when we have this sequence of monotone iterations, certainly monotones, so they are increasing, they converge to something, it's not a priori clear that the limit is going to be finite. Of course, one may say directly, look, but certainly we know that the monotone iterations, they are all below the value function. So if you have something that tells you the value function is finite, true value function, then this limit should be finite as well. This is certainly true, but in order to do this, in order to actually see that all the n's are below the value function, we would already need at least a side of the dynamic programming equation for the value function. And we want to avoid this altogether, so we show analytically that this is finite. And in addition, another part of technicalities, this is probably the harder part, is we need some controls on the jump measure comparable to the utility function to get the uniform integrability. So as usual, whenever you can solve dynamic programming equation, which is hard by itself, in this case it's not that hard, then we still have to worry about uniform integrability, and this is the slightly harder part. So what we do is we impose some power-like conditions on a utility for very high wells and for very low wells, and then we impose also some kind of compatibility condition of the very large jumps compared to the right tail of the utility, and the jumps which are very close to negative 100% compared to the utility close to zero. So we impose some condition on the model, and we do have uniform integrability and so on. So everything works fine. Okay. In this process, fortunately, you can do the same kind of verification word by word. Right? And we see that the approximate solution in this monotone iteration scheme, they also have a nice meaning. They represent some kind of intermediate control problems. And they are going to be, so Vn of 0 and corresponding to initial wells 0 is going to be the supremum of expected utility from terminal wells over all admissible controls. But what kind of controls? The controls where you can trade at any trading slash observation time, but not after the end arrival time. So, taking into account that the problem is infinite horizon in time, finite horizon in time and infinite horizon in n, this trick somehow more or less tells you that what we are doing here, so in n our problem is infinite horizon, and we approximate our infinite horizon problem by finite horizon in n when we let n be larger and larger. So in the end, this is the idea behind the monotone iteration approximation, and fortunately we also have a stochastic control representation. Okay. So, of course, if we have power utilities, things are even easier. So the power scales out, and they're going to just have one-dimensional nonlinear integral equation for in time, okay, with a terminal condition of 1. So things become a little bit easier. Yeah, we still don't have a closed-form solution, but yeah, the same. So this is just a special case, so we don't need to treat it separately because it fits in the previous case. Okay. So, in the end, what we have is a discrete control problem where observation trading times occur at a sequence of exponentially distributed time with a deterministic but not constant intensity. So we write down dynamic programming equation, we solve it analytically, and we do verification to get the optimal control. So, I would say, so as I probably mentioned it maybe too many times, this is the part that I like, that we don't have to do it the other direction. It works simply like the classical dynamic programming arguments. Okay. Now let's talk about asymptotic behavior. So asymptotic in what sense? If we fix an intensity rate lambda, then let's call V sub 0 upper lambda the maximal expected utility in this model, where we keep the fundamental process as it is, and with respect to this intensity lambda. Okay. And what we want to do is, so we have more and more trades close to the finite time horizon. So we have a stochastic intensity, a deterministic intensity, which is a very large close to maturity. What if we take, let's say, a function like this and we push it up all together? So in other words, intensity is going to be very large at all times, not just at terminal times. So we will be able to trade more and more from time 0 up to time capital T. So we do expect that in some sense, this value function should be very close to the value function if we allow trading at all times. Okay. So this is, the intuition is quite obvious. There is a small thing that has to be taken into account. So we define the continuous time filtration, and we take trading strategies with respect to continuous time, so they should be predictable. There is a very important point, though. So, again, although, so the discrete time problem has short sail constraints, okay? And the short sail constraints, they do not depend on intensity. So even if intensity is very large at all times, we still have short sail constraints. So you should certainly impose short sail constraints on the continuous time problem. So we define by V sub 0 upper M for Merton the supremum, the maximal expected utility for all continuous time strategies with short sail constraints. Okay, so one way to prove that when intensity is large, we're going to be close to the continuous problem would be the following. The continuous problem is also a Markov problem, so we could go over dynamic programming, but this is outside of our scope, what we do. And of course, then we could take the optimal feedback control, write the closed loop equation, so it would be kind of a reasonably long story whether it has a solution, how it works, and so on. And then if in addition we had regularity on the optimal feedback control, then it's, once we have regularity, it's probably very likely that if we discretize this randomly with respect to the arrival times, then what we have here, at least the terminal time, would converge to what we have there. So therefore, the value function would also converge. Okay, but we have to do two things. So first, to solve in full the continuous time problem, which is not actually what we worried in this paper, because we care about the discrete time problem rather about the continuous. Yeah. So we want the approximation to go the other way. So we want to approximate the discrete time problem by the continuous, not the other way. And then we also would need some kind of regularity on the feedback representation of the optimal control. And this is certainly a lot more complicated than what we need here. So we choose a different route, and the point is the following. So we choose a probabilistic way to actually prove it, and how does it work? So first, we take a continuous time trading strategy, and this continuous time trading strategy does not only have to depend on time and current position. It's going to be just a general continuous time trading strategy where you observe at any moment the stock price is in full up to time t, and your strategy can depend on this, so it's a fully predictable trading strategy. It's not a Markov one. And using some arguments of Cardaras and Platon, a trading strategy with constraints could be approximating, of course, when the intensity is large, we have to say in what sense in a second, can be a fully predictable continuous time trading strategy can be approximated by a trading strategy with respect to this discrete trading times. Okay. The whole point is that when we do this, if we want to approximate a fully predictable trading strategy, which at any moment look at the full past of the stock price, when we want to approximate it by trading strategies, we also have to look at each of these stopping times, not only at the sequence of stopping times that we have in the middle, but at the full path of the continuous S up to that time. Okay, so this is a different information structure than what we have when we set up our optimal investment model, because it's a different problem rather than having posted this trade and observation times and observing the stock only there, or observing fully the stock but only be allowed to trade that time. Fortunately, because of the Markov structure, it doesn't really matter. We can do the same verification for this larger filtration, and we are going to get that these value functions are the same. So, using this approximation technique, indeed we get that in the limit we get at least as well from the approximation sequence that we have in the Markov problem, and by independence we also have the other inequality, so we certainly have that the value functions converge. So in other sense, we move somehow the Markov argument from the continuous problem that we have here, where somehow we avoid proving that proving dynamic programming, all the steps in dynamic programming for the continuous problem. So in some sense, we move the observation that we expect the optimal control in here to be Markov. We move this observation that the problem is Markov from continuous time to discrete time. And this is a lot easier because in discrete time, we already have a solution to dynamic programming equation. Dynamic programming equation does not depend on filtration because we have this independent increment structure. So we are already done. So somehow, using this approximation argument, we move the hard part from the continuous time to something that we already know. So at the end of the day, the precise result is, if the intensities, they are going to get very large in this sense, that the series of exponential negative t to s of intensity is finite for any two times, then the utility, the expected utility in the discrete problem is going to converge to the maximal expected utility in the Merton problem. So of course, this more or less comes from the Borel-Cantelli. This is the reason why we need it, because when we do the approximation argument, we need a uniform convergence in probability. Okay. So, in the end, what do we have? We have a model, time illiquidity, which we model as a stochastic control problem, which is finite horizon in time, is the infinite horizon with respect to number of trades or observations, and it accounts for exactly what we wanted in the beginning, which is a lot more trades closer to terminal time. We are able to solve it, and we avoid viscosity solution, so we can do verification. And we, fortunately, we also have an asymptotic behavior when the intensity is large at all times. So I think I will stop here, and let me know if you have questions. Yeah. So I guess, yes, please. Yeah.
What do you gain by randomizing time? Or is there something which is working here which would not work in a deterministic?
No, I mean the problem is going to be reasonably similar, I would say. The whole point is that if you want to apply a deterministic Euler scheme, so the fact that tau's n's are random is not going to be really that bad, as you say. The real problem is we need to solve the continuous time problem, and we need some regularity on pi. And this is somehow we are able to shift this difficulty to something that we have already done. But yeah, this is my game. It's not going to be very different. Yeah, especially because you have independence, and it's not going to be such a problem. Does it answer your question? Yeah. The Levy in the fact the Levy structure is used in the fact that the way you set up the dynamic programming equation. So the Levy structure. So in the end, it's used the fact that you have independent increments. Yeah. So it's here. Yeah, basically used. When you compute conditional expectation of what is going to be next compared to where you are now. So you need some kind of independence. This is exactly where the Levy structure is used. Yeah? Okay. The answer is that Huyen said that maybe we should do it, but I was saying that this model, I honestly believe it's too simple to do numerics at this moment. So my hope is to go to a little bit more realistic models and then to do numerics. So the answer is no. So in my view, more realistic would be the following. There should be some kind of correlation structure between stopping times and this fundamental process. This is to begin with. This should be, because this independence certainly the least unrealistic, because I mean if something is trading more and more, I mean, so somehow if you have time illiquidity, it's also reasonable to believe that you have some kind of volume illiquidity which would drive this price S. So this is the most unrealistic, and this is, and also this then the this rate lambda should be stochastic and most likely should be unobserved and so on, so this should be more realistic. Yeah. But first would be the correlation between arrival times and this fundamental. So this would I would regard as more realistic. Okay.